Health and Human Services Budget Division will come to order. We have Senate File 1509 first on the agenda today. Senator Torres Ray. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Andrew Kitch. I have a microphone, so I'm going to send a guest to speak up so that you can hear us. Madam Chair, Senate File 1509, as members know, is a bill that was heard in the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee. We presented this bill, and there was a question about a fiscal note that may be associated with this, and Senator Berman requested that this bill come to here to be to start the review. Senator Berman, indeed, we find that there is a fiscal note associated with this bill related to Article 4, and what we are proposing to do is that we amend the bill, and we have the A2 amendment. Madam Chair, if we could please introduce it so that we can take care of that portion so that we can move the bill without the fiscal provision.
We can move it, but we don't quite have a quorum yet. So Senator Lynch will move the amendment, and then we'll just keep talking about the bill for a little bit more here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And basically, the bill itself deal with child care assistance and align payment policies with implementation of statewide child care assistance system, and that this particular change will be implemented in most counties by the end of the calendar. It was implemented by 2008. It also includes program integrity. It left the specific statutory ban on charging for development and maintenance of county-initiated projects. It clarifies that the judgment by operation of low process
titles
for state-funded and medical assistance, and allow the use of administrative process to renew these overpayment judgments, to provide procedures to do so, which allow it to be practical and cost-saving for counties and the board. It includes general assistance and group residential housing verifications, update the MFIP traditional standard to reflect increases for the federal nutrition program. It adjusts the participation rate target for counties for based on caseload reduction. It creates uniform definition for the ability to obtain or retain suitable employment. It clarifies the statute to ensure the work benefit program scheduled for to be implemented in 2009 meets federal requirements. It clarifies family stability services with extension of eligibility criteria for universal participation. It removes language regarding reduced hours for universal participation, statute that is no longer needed, and it aligns the diversionary work program. With current practice, updating the elected transitional standard to reflect increases in the federal nutrition program. And, Madam Chair, as I stated earlier, many of the members know we went through these provisions. Policy committee. And the reason we are before your committee today was related to the fiscal note attached to the end of
Senator.
Well, it's not because of a fiscal note. It's because we want to make sure we keep those provisions here because we'll be doing some work on MFIP, and we don't want these provisions to conflict with what we might be doing in the judiciary. Are there any questions for either the senator or for the witness?
I don't know if she's going to want to hand it out.
See any. Senator Torres Ray, we do need one more person before we can vote on your amendment or your bill. My intention would be to send your bill out to the full Finance Committee. would care to stay, you can do that. Otherwise, if you feel comfortable having us act without you, you can decide. I know everybody's very busy right now. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, just sort of had a quick thought. Senator Torres Ray, you and I have a bill that is related to some ideas that came forward in the mandate work group with regard to child support. My bill number is 1292. I'm sorry, I don't have the reference to your number, but I think you know which one I'm talking about. And I was just asking Senate counsel if it might work or be appropriate to amend that language onto your bill. I wish I would have thought of this a few minutes ago, but basically there were two provisions that came forward in that work group that didn't have fiscal costs associated with them, and they were designed to just give a little bit more flexibility, particularly to the judiciary and to the families involved. I mean, would you be open to that?
We can now vote on the A2 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Lynch would move that Senate File 1509 as amended be recommended to pass. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Dibble? Well, Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair, where is Senate File 1509? Where is it going to?
The Finance Committee.
Let's see it there.
Thank you. Senator Lynch, why don't I take a look at that, and I will get back to you to find out what the status of the judiciary is. And my hope is that we will be able to resolve that, and I'll get back to you again. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Senator Dibble, Senate File 969.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I also
members,
need my budget.
Senate File 969
sitting on my desk.
Seeks some resources to fund the services outlined in the Runaway Homeless Youth Act. And, members, the handouts are coming around to you. Just to remind folks about the Runaway Homeless Youth Act that we passed a couple of years ago. And what that policy establishes is a definition of homeless youth. These, of course, are youth who, for whatever reason, either on a temporary or permanent basis, have become disconnected from their families. And it identifies the range of services that are necessary to address this, either an attempt to unify one time funds to provide some funding And another one of your handouts describes how that $1 million was spent across the entire state. Almost $5 million was applied for. It speaks to the need out there and the capacity of community-based agencies to do this kind of work with runaway and homeless youth. And the need continues and persists and is ongoing. We understand, of course, that was one-time dollars. And we're in a budget deficit. But since then, of course, the Federal Stimulus Act was passed. And we're scouring the provisions, mostly administered by HUD and as well, and a couple of other agencies that may help fund at least some part of the continuum of services that fall under the runaway policy. With that, Madam Chair, we have a couple of folks who can speak very briefly. We have Susan Phillips.
Senator Dibble, you're right. We're hearing this bill because we hope to maybe be able to find something in a stimulus provision that could fund some of this. But when your witnesses are done, we'd like to hear a little bit from you, because this is one-time money, about how the money could be used in a way that it does not create continuing pressure on our budget to be funded in the future, since we have 4 years of deficits that we're dealing with. Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Phillips, and I serve as Director of Lincoln Social Services Homeless Youth Programs here in the metro area. Thank you for hearing testimony about the Runaway Homeless Youth Act this morning. This bill represents an opportunity for you to think forward and to invest in the lives of young people statewide who would otherwise become chronically homeless and cost taxpayers 2 to 3 times as much as intervention does in crisis care, long-term dependency on assistance, and correctional services. Evaluations that were conducted by Rainbow Research on the currently funded programs found that 80 to 90% of youth served by these programs did not become involved in criminal and high-risk behavior as a result of their participation. We have a young man currently living in our transitional housing program, Rest House, who illustrates both the impact of intervention and the importance of the continuum of services supported by this act. Zach became homeless when his parents moved to Kuwait to work for a government-contracted organization, and his brother was unable to care for him. He broke into abandoned buildings to have a roof over his head and began to use drugs to numb the cold and the emotional pain of being alone. He cut copper out of these abandoned buildings and began to sell it to meet his basic needs and the chemicals of it. Outreach workers found Zach a couple of years ago and brought him to our youth shelter safe house. He moved into Rest House, our transitional housing program, a year ago in December, and has completely and totally turned his life around. He is in his third semester at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. He has recently been hired as a peer outreach worker by Face to Face, another local organization, and is a leader among his peers. And he often says to me, "I don't know where I would be today if it hadn't been for you folks." Zach may very well have been a regular user of emergency services, detox, and probably would have ended up in the correctional system and in prison if we had not intervened in his life. And that would have cost Minnesota taxpayers a whole lot more money than the little bit of money we're asking for to intervene in young people's lives. So I ask you to please think of the Runaway Homeless Youth Act as an investment in the future of Minnesota rather than something that we need to spend money on that doesn't really make that much of a difference, because it does. It makes a big difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Would you like to testify now also, if you can identify yourself for the record?
Hi, I'm Hannah Kimbrough. I live at Rest House now. I think the programs that we have now is like perfect things that help me a lot, because before my mom and our family moved homeless, and if it wasn't for people that was helping homeless families, I think most likely my brothers and sisters, probably like three of my sisters are now going to college, two of my brothers on their way, and now I'm on my way to college. If it wasn't for the homeless people helping us get I'm a little nervous. To help me, I would not be graduating from high school. I'd be graduating in 09. I probably would be still like doing drugs than I used to a long time ago because my mom, she left and I was up here by myself for a long period of time. I was homeless and I didn't know what a stable environment felt like until I got met up with Outreach. They gave me the number to Resi and like they've helped put a big impact in my life. Like now I know what I want to do. I know that I want to finish high school and go to college. Because while I was homeless, the only thing I could think about was what I'm going to eat next week, where I'm going to sleep. I wasn't thinking about finishing school or getting a job at all. But now that I have, that I know there's people out there helping me, that's willing to help me get a place for my own, and to know what it feels like to be independent, it's a beautiful feeling. So if there were more people, outreachers, and LSS buildings, homeless youth, I think St. Paul and Minneapolis will be a much better place than it is now.
Thank you for coming today. Are there any questions? Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair and members, as I scour the funds that come through time specifically that address housing and homelessness, one category that we focus on is, of course, homelessness prevention and the rapid rehousing efforts that are called for out of the stimulus dollars coming to Minnesota. About 20-some million bucks of those. There are about seven grantees. I think the state share of that is something over $10 million. And so certainly some of the eligible activities that can be funded out of those sources touch very strongly on the continuum of services that are provided by the Minnesota Act. Well, not all of them, but some of them. Particularly those case management. So that's what we're focused on. To answer your question, Madam Chair, how do we prevent ongoing needs? I don't have the answer until we solve the issue of unattached minors who have become disconnected from their families all across the state. We'll continue to think about this issue. Great and ongoing pressure on our state budget, but figure out how we can take care of this.
Well, just so Senator Dibble, just so people who are here today understand that if we can find any money, it will be stimulus money and it will be one-time money. Are there any other questions for Senator Dibble? Is there anyone here from the department that has any more information about the stimulus money? We asked them when they did their overview of the governor's budget, and they said at that time that they were looking at it and they were hoping this would fit, but they didn't know. Is there anybody here today that would have any more information about this? Guess not. So we'll set this aside. Hope we can include something in the omnibus bill with stimulus money for this request.
I'll visit with you and your staff.
Thank you very much, Senator Dibble. Next on the agenda is Senate File 711, Senator Marty. Senator Marty here. Senator Prettner-Solon, I know you have to perhaps leave before we're done, so maybe we could take you next then.
non-useful note for this session. And it is important and it warrants your careful attention and support based upon several critical facts. The 16 health licensing boards are entirely defunded. That is, they receive absolutely no general fund dollars. The boards are statutorily required to collect sufficient fees to cover all their operations. This bill is not a request for increased fees. It is a request for increased spending authority. All programs within the health licensing boards exist solely to provide public protection. This request for increased spending authority will allow the boards to utilize the fees that the licensees are paying for the sole purpose that those fees and licensure exist. That is public protection. The over 200,000 Minnesota health license holders expect the regulatory boards to continue to provide the same high levels of efficient and effective consumer protection services. The fees haven't changed, therefore the public protection and licensee services do not change. Madam Chair, I have Stephanie Lunning from the Board of Physical Therapy and Lori Nicholson from the Board of Health to address these issues. But I also have a Green Bill amendment, which would be an author's amendment. That's the
While we're getting that handed out, maybe we can focus on anything that isn't in the governor's budget. Is there anything in the bill that's not in the governor's budget? Because we did review the governor's budget earlier this year.
The only thing that's in the governor's budget would be not from this bill, no.
So all of the things in this bill are in the governor's budget?
They are not in the governor's budget.
They are not in the governor's budget. All right, well, then I guess we have to go through one by one and justify them all, Senator Solon.
Yes.
So just to get it before us, Senator Solon has moved the A1 amendment. Maybe we should go through and discuss these items before we adopt the amendment, Senator Solon. Senator Pretner Solon. So are you increasing per diems in this request?
No, we are.
Are you increasing salaries in this request?
Senator
Pretner Solon.
Madam Chair, what they're asking is to be able to increase their spending authority for the fees that they were collecting in 2011. So they're not increasing any fees. They're just asking.
I understand that, Senator, but we still need to justify the spending. I don't understand that. I just have to say I don't understand how we're doubling the cost of your agency because you're doing the same thing.
Excuse me,
Madam Chair, it's not doubling. That's in the, we have three employees, so our overall salaries and board per diems and benefits are many thousands more than 9,000 and 18,000. It's the additional cost that we have. We just don't have anywhere else to get the money from within our current spending authority. We are collecting plenty of money in terms of our fees to cover this increase in our expense of paying family health insurance for an employee, but we don't have the spending authority that allows us access to that money.
So was this request submitted to the governor's office?
It was submitted to the Department of Finance, and the governor's office did not include any of these requests in their budget.
Madam Chair, all of these fees are collected by the licensees. There is a fund balance that is 80% of the expenses, of their usual expenses. And they're just asking for the ability to spend a little bit more of the fees that they collect from their licensees in order to cover their overhead in their offices.
Senator Pretner-Sola, not every board that you have on this list of request has a positive balance that they're contributing to the board.
Madam Chair, would that be the Board of Chiropractic and Board of Veterinary Medicine, where they have other bills in the legislature that are addressing things that resulted as a result of some big legal fees?
Well, we don't have the report here today at this committee meeting, so we can't tell you exactly which ones, but some of them have a negative in terms of their contribution to the board, and every one of them on this amendment are getting increases.
I'm Laurie Mickelson, Board Executive Director for the Board of Optometry. I believe we are aware of at least the two that Ms. Lunning mentioned, veterinary medicine and chiropractic, who are running a deficit due to some very high legal expenses. And those two boards are also in another bill requesting a fee increase so that they can recover and get back into positive.
Well, we don't have that bill in our committee. Senator Lynch.
I think it would be helpful if we had a sense of not only if they have a positive balance or not have a positive balance, but how much they have sitting there. And you, a couple of times, referenced that there's some small increases. 2.24, the Board of Nursing, is I think, arguably rather large fee, and I'm wondering if you have some additional comments you'd like to make with regard to that.
Go ahead.
I know that the Board of Nursing's large increase, the first year included $750,000 and the second year $250,000, that they are one-time money that they are wanting to spend for technology to complete the work on the board's complaint investigation and educational program application system. So this is technology update, and that they do have fees coming in for accumulated money in the special revenue fund from fees collected in previous years that would cover those refunds. That's why they have those huge requests.
Chloe Barkin, I'm the executive director of the Board of Nursing. The board projected fund balance, or in the special revenue fund, excess funds in the special revenue fund for the next biennium is approximately $5.2 million.
That's just for the Board of Nursing, and we have other bills that are in the hopper, so to speak, to use that money also.
Madam Chair, I'm not saying that's how much the board is seeking. I'm telling you that's what the board's fund balance will be
but
the special revenue fund. Yes.
Right.
There is a bill.
There are other bills that are spending that money also. So.
Okay. Madam Chair, the only bill that I'm aware of is the one that transfers $1.5 million from the special revenue fund of nurse licensure fees to the general fund for the Commissioner of Health to
Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair, Senator Prentice-Solon, it might help us if we had a bit more of a narrative on each of these, a bit more of an explanation. And so I just feel like there's not enough detail here. It's hard for me to know if this is warranted or not warranted, or if this is
exactly,
good
that's
or
why,
not good.
You know, when we go through the governor's budget, we do have everyone come in, explain their item, and we would need that for every one of these also as to the reason for the increased request. So I'm thinking maybe at this time, since Senator Marty is here, we could set this aside and y'all could be getting prepared to do that for us.
Madam Chair, for this morning, would you still like that?
Well, if we have we'll have time after we get done with Senator Marty's bills, yes. Senator Marty, Senate File 711.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the division. Senate File 711 was a bill that had a fiscal note. 711 had a fiscal note, deals with TEFRA, the parental fees for children with disabilities, and we have an amendment related to government use, I believe it's the A2 amendment, and we would take out the language that reduces the fees, and then the only thing left in the bill would be a notice that the parent would may be responsible for paying taxes on the amount they have. And so the point of asking for the hearing today would be so we could offer the amendment, which is reluctant because we love to be able to cut the parental contribution fees because they are too high. But we recognize the budget difficulty, and Mr. Larson in ARP Minnesota believes that the notice would still be worth having, even if we it would be helpful to people.
Senator Lynch, would you like to move the A2 amendment for Senator Marty?
So moved.
Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. I think that does take the fiscal impact out of the bill. Is there any further discussion? Senator Lynch, would you like to move Senate File 711 as amended be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Marty, you might want to talk with Senator Cohen about possibly re-referring this as a motion on the floor, since it has no fiscal impact. A number of these going through the Finance Committee that are probably next week going to clog up the committee. So
I will try to get to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Marty. So you have another bill on the agenda here, Senate File 1445.
And, Madam Chair, this is a Department of Health technical bill that came here because there are sections 3 to 5 that's combining two fees. The fiscal notice you'll see says there's no fiscal impact because we're just combining the two fees and keeping the amount, the cumulative amount the same. There's no fiscal impact. And Tom Hindemeyer's here can go through the bill. We do have an amendment, the A4 amendment, which is 3 new provisions, 2 of which we passed in other bills, and the 3rd of which is purely technical. And I can go through them, or the 3 changes, or Mr. Hindemeyer can as well.
Do we have the amendment?
A4.
Somehow I don't seem to have one. Okay. Any discussion? Senator Lynch moves the A4 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. And we have the fiscal note in our packet showing no fiscal impact. So this bill could move on to the Finance Committee as well. Senator Lynch, would you like to move the bill for Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate File 1445 as amended, being recommended to pass.
Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, would you suggest
they do the same thing with the floor motion on this and send it off with Senator Thompson? I would. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senator Pretner-Solon,
do you want to revert back to your bill or do you need a little more time? Madam Chair, they need to get back to their office and have all that material that they had forwarded to the governor forwarded to us before they could move forward.
So we'll just lay the bill over today and not be taking it up again? Or are they coming back?
They are trying to pull it together.
All right. Well, we'll see where we're at.
Next item on our agenda will be Senate File 780. Senator Berglund. Senate File 1333. Senator Berglund. That amendment's being passed out. Senator Berglund, do you want to make some comments about the A1 amendment?
Oh, sorry.
amendment has been recommended, language changed by the Department of Human Services. It simply changed the language that's in the bill regarding capital and operating assets that are used for personal expenses in business. So it's just rewarding
the bill. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill was brought to me by Anoka County. I do believe, Senate Council, that we're going to need a delayed effective date on this because of the provisions of the Community Act. But this was brought to me by Anoka County. They have seen individuals who are applying for our health care programs that really don't meet the income requirements, but are shielding their income in order to qualify by using their businesses to cover their personal expenses and not giving themselves them the salary that they really are generating from that business. I don't think that meets either the spirit or the letter of the law. We don't want those kind of abuses going on because it does tend to discredit our programs in the eyes of public. So we have with me today Tom Rachel from the Anoka County Attorney's Office to talk about examples of cases that they thought might get seen.
Mr. Rachel, welcome to the committee.
Because Minnesota Statute 256.98, which is our statute for theft by wrongfully obtaining assistance, dictates the criteria required for these completed investigations to the Anoka County prosecutors. We are required to show, one, that there's a false representation or omission, and secondly, that the amount of assistance incorrectly paid must be the difference between the amount actually received on the basis of a false statement versus what would have been paid had the false statement or concealment not occurred. There's an asset limitation for eligibility for adults. The limitation for the adults is $20,000. The residence if occupied by the family is not considered an asset that means your homestead. Financial specialists when examining these individuals for eligibility do not focus on the homestead. They do not look at that as exempt from the program. So, question 20 on the standard application inquires about real property as a value. However, the application does not inquire if there's a mortgage on the property or what the monthly payment might be. A simple inquiry into the monthly mortgage payment that's obtained is currently disclosed a more accurate response to what they're in. The first thing I as an investigator look at when I receive a request for investigation is the value of the real property. Mortgage or mortgages on the property, the date of the mortgage. I also want to know if the mortgage is in foreclosure. investigations frequently result in investigation of finances, which includes an examination of bank accounts and income tax returns. It's been my experience and the experience of other investigators in my office that these self-employed individuals have taken personal expenses from business accounts, such as mortgage, utilities, grocery, liquor, salon, etc. The Department of Human Services policy that one new business account used to pay personal expenses cannot be considered as personal income for eligibility purposes. DHS has been notified of this issue. Prosecutors in our office have informed our investigators that the DHS policy that money used to pay personal expenses for a business account cannot be considered as income for eligibility purposes, then they, in good conscience, cannot prosecute these individuals for pay personal expenses from their business accounts. I have found that the Form 1040 U.S. individual tax return that is presented to the financial specialist by self-employed individuals applying for health care programs and that have been referred to me for investigation generally do not reflect the individual's true gross taxable income. The Minnesota Department of Revenue is prohibited from acknowledging to anyone in Form 1040 presented for proof of income for health care eligibility on the same 1040 filed with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I believe that this bill will rectify the necessary requirements to eliminate these individuals from our programs. Families with large assets have the option of applying for health care programs for children and assets are not considered only their income. I have some examples of some investigations. I have one investigation that has not been referred for prosecution because a tax return was used sole basis for eligibility. My investigation revealed that these individuals are living in have assets such as IRAs, 401ks in excess of $500,000. Their home is valued at $560,000. Their adjusted gross income on their tax return is $39,420 or $3,280 per month. The mortgages on this property are $567,000. Second mortgage is $107,000 a month in payment of $679,000. Obviously, their monthly income when the mortgage is current exceeds what's under attack. This investigation came to our attention about 4 years ago. I was not familiar with the medical assistance program. It was brought to me because of a tax return that didn't appear proper. The individual family up in Burns Township that moved into our county in 2003. They bought a home valued at $285,000. A search for their income showed that they were self-employed. They were disclosing this and said they had zero income. Their monthly payment on their house was $2,500 a month. They bought a new Tahoe. The payment on that was $750 a month. The source of their income was from our personal care attendant program, which is financed through the medical daughter in the house was billing for 24 hours, 7 days a week services for her mother. And the father in the house was billing another health agency for personal care attendant services to his father. That case was investigated and prosecuted at last the state of Minnesota about $233,000. Now I have some examples here.
Mr. Rachel, I think you've given us the information that we need. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, because we just got the suggested language from the department late last night, and they told us that they would not have a fiscal note done for the bill regarding the new language, I don't exactly understand how that defeats the old language. Anyway, but I think... so we'll be getting that fiscal note, but I think this is a policy that we would want to honor this bill regardless of what the fiscal note is. So I thought it would be okay to go ahead with the bill.
Any questions? Senator Berglund.
So we need a delayed effective date on this?
Yeah, Madam
Kavanaugh.
Madam Chair, I think it's July 1 of 2011. January 1 of 2011, we could just incorporate that in the amendment? Or is it, oh, we've already voted on the amendment.
We've adopted, we have adopted the amendment.
I would so move that.
Senator Berglund's oral amendment, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oral amendment is adopted.
And that then will also help us with the correct
January.
And I would move that Senate File 1333 has amended the latest size for inclusion in the
On Senator Berglund's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator Berglund, would you like to move on to your next bill?
Yes, I would.
Senate File 780, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think at least those of you who are here have heard this bill in the policy committee already, so I won't go into all of the details about what a birthing center is or how it encourages the natural birth process, the normal physiological process of giving birth to a child normally. I will focus on the fiscal note just a little bit, and I will say that I do believe that there needs to be some more work done on the fiscal note. The fiscal note assumes only 3% of the births in our public program are normal deliveries, which seems to me to be an incredibly low number. And the methodology by which this is determined, I believe, is flawed as well. They looked at the fee-for-service program and then extrapolated from that. We need to remember that the only women that are giving birth in our fee-for-service program are women that are coming in to get services at such a late time in their delivery that they cannot actually be expected to sign up for a major birth. And so chances are most of those women haven't had prenatal services during the time of their pregnancy. And so they probably are at higher risk for not having the normal delivery. But most of the women in our CNAP program are getting prenatal services during the time of their pregnancy. And so I believe a much higher percentage would be expected to have normal delivery. So I think that this fiscal note underestimates the savings. Then I would turn to the part of the bill that deals with the fees and the licensing of the birth centers. And I'd like to move the 8th amendment in regard to that part of the bill. This amendment would appropriate money from the general fund that we would be using savings from this bill to pay for the rulemaking that would be needed for the licensure of birthing centers, so that that does not need to fall on birthing centers in terms of a cost to the licensure in the first year of the program. I believe that if we ask the birthing centers to carry the rolling costs on their licensing fees, that it will be a disincentive for birthing centers to be created. I also believe and hope that we will have more than 10 birthing centers licensed each year. Under this bill, there is an incentive for managed care organizations to either create or contract with birthing centers. So it would seem to me that we would perhaps spend half more than 10 a year, and that in the future will lower the fee that would need to be charged for the licensure as well.
Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund.
So, Madam Chair, I'd like to just take a few words of testimony because we do have a witness here. We have not the witness listed on the schedule, however.
All right, Ms. Lane, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
of various professionals who work with women during the perinatal period. And I don't, as the senator, have any to review all the details of why we support this bill, but I can't just indicate that we do support the bill. It's been reviewed by the certified professional midwives, the certified nurse midwives, the psychologists, and others in our organization.
Questions from members. Senator Berglund, I have two questions, I think. One, at the very beginning of your comments, did I hear you correctly that you said that the fiscal note reflects only 3%? Mm-hmm. Go back to that 3% number again for us, if you would, just to make sure that we heard it correctly.
Well, if you look, the fiscal note indicates that
Mr. Godfrey,
that there would be a 3% reduction in fee for service, and then they base it on 3% being normal delivery, and they're basing that on the experience they have in the fee for service program, and then they're extrapolating that to managed care. I know we have about a 27% cesarean section. We also do have a code for complicated vaginal births. But I just find it very difficult to believe that only 3% of the babies in public programs to manage care are normal vaginal births. And that's what this was going to be. So I will be requesting the department to seek information from the managed care plan about their experience in regard to the number of normal vaginal births that they are having today. Of course, anyway, we believe that by changing the delivery system here, we actually will result in more normal vaginal births. That's part of the reason we're having this bill. But I can understand why they went to the necessarily forecast more non-vaginal births, but I do think that we should be getting this on the base of more normal vaginal births that we have today.
Mr.
Chair,
Ms. Lane.
I think that goes to the definition of normal vaginal births. The hospital is uncomplicated. Much
Mr. Godfrey, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. I'd just like to clarify a little bit of the analysis provided by Senator Berglund there. Just to clarify exactly how the savings were derived, at least my understanding from the initial reading of this fiscal note. If you turn to page 7 of the fiscal note and you look at that table, you'll see, actually, the 3% refers to, excuse me for this squeaking, the 3% refers to 3% of total inpatient hospital payments. And you'll see that for medical assistance families with children on that first line. For instance, fiscal year 2010 is $254.9 million. What they're doing to derive the savings is to assume that the bill will reduce those total payments by 3%. It's not necessarily saying that it's 3% of all births or uncomplicated births represent. I mean, this is only 3% of births. So it's saying that uncomplicated payments for uncomplicated births represent 3% of all total inpatient hospital payments, and so that's what the 3% means. What we don't have here, and Senator Berglund, further comments, the new fiscal note is needed because it doesn't show exactly how many, what the effect or how many total uncomplicated births we have. that are affected by this bill. It also doesn't show any sort of savings or interaction with this policy would have in terms of reducing non-uncomplicated bursts. But I just want to clarify that the 3% refers to a reduction in total inpatient hospital payments without any details about how many births that represents or other information specific to birthing.
And Senator Bergen, if I could just ask one.
Chair, I guess because, we're going to run out of time here. I thought we would leave the bill on the agenda today and discuss the deficiencies in the fiscal note. And then we'll set the bill aside for possible inclusion. And then when we get a new fiscal note, we'll just include it in your packets and then we'll call your attention to it.
Senator Bergen, if I could just ask one more question. In the fiscal note indicates that we're going to have 10 birthing centers in 10 and another 10 in 11, one per year in 12 and 13. That sounds like a lot to me. I mean, I heard you say, I hope that someday we have more than this. Is it practical? Can we do 10 in 2010? And you mentioned that there's an incentive. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, in the bill, we do indicate that we would be writing into the managed care contracts that this would be the preferred means of delivery for normal births. And they would be getting paid based on this fee for their normal births. So, being that the cost in the birthing center would be paid for it under the bill, there would be a big incentive for the managed
any additional questions? Well, Senator Berglund, I know that we share your frustration with this fiscal note. And we'll lay this one aside.
Yeah, we'll lay this aside for possible inclusion in none of this bill, and we'll request that the department redo the fiscal note.
Okay. And
the other bill that Senator Putner sold in hands, they're not going to be ready today. So we won't be reverting back to that.
Okay, so members, there being no further business before us, the meeting is adjourned.